from deep inside your radio.
Yes, Wolf Blitzer says around the world, not around the world. Like there's some other way to circumnavigate the world aside from around. Around the world. I know, I'm hung up on that stuff. Here's what I'm really hung up on, ladies and gentlemen. Dateline Santa Maria, California. Can you hear the fan in the background? That's right, I have a fan. No autographs. Dateline Santa Maria, California. Michael Jackson's lawyer told a court this past week he planned to call a star-studded list of witnesses to defend the singer against child molestation charges, including Kobe Bryant. That's a character witness. Yeah. Actress Elizabeth Taylor, who memorably once said Michael Jackson is the most normal person she knew. And Tonight Show host Jay Leno, who owns a lot of cars. The list would also include Stevie Wonder. He didn't see anything. Barry Gibb and Diana Ross. Comedian Chris Tucker. He's the black Chris that didn't shock the Oscars. Talk show host Larry King and lifestyle guru Deepak Chopra. It's a dream green room I'm seeing, ladies and gentlemen.
Deepak, what are you going to testify to?
Well, Larry, I had a wonderful conversation with Michael at one time, and I told him, you're a very unique person. You're the only one I've ever consulted with who really has to work to find the grown-up within.
Yeah. I told him to take more garlic.
Hello, welcome to the show.
Time. I'd love to be holding you tight. I guess I'll have to accept the fact that you are not here. I wish tonight would hurry up and end, my dear. It's raining so hard, it's really coming down. Sitting by my window, watching the rain fall to the ground. This is the time I'd love to be holding you tight. I guess I'll just go crazy tonight. It's raining so hard, brings back memories of the times when you were here with me, counting every drop, about to blow my top. I wish this rain would hurry up and stop. I got the blues so bad, I could hardly catch my breath. The harder it rains, the worst it gets. This is the time I'd love to be holding you tight. I guess I'll just go crazy tonight.
From the very soggy edge of America, from the home of the homeless, or as a New York Times freelance television critic said yesterday, sometimes called the home to the homeless. No, the home of the homeless, but thanks for the mentions. Thanks for the nearly correct quotation. I'm fitness celebrity Harry Shearer, welcoming you to yet another edition of the show in its 22nd year of disservice to the community. And, ladies and gentlemen, let's start off with a good dose of fear. What do you say? Time to get scared.
Let's get scared. Let's get scared.
Yes. First, this story really has its nexus, or its nextel, in Santa Monica, here in the home of the homeless, or as the New York Times quoted it, the home to the homeless, as it's sometimes called. No, it's not, ever. Thank you. Dateline San Francisco, the world's first mobile phone virus in the wild, that's in quotes, for reasons unknown to me, has spread to the United States from its birthplace in the Philippines 8 months ago. This is according to a security research firm. The virus called Kabir, C-A-B-I-R, has spread slowly into 12 countries and marks the beginning of the mobile phone virus era. Hey, let's drink to that. Now you're talking eras. The mobile phone virus era. Because they're not annoying enough. Already. Which could one day disrupt the lives of many of the world's 1.5 billion mobile phone users. The biggest impact of the relatively innocuous virus, found in 15 variations so far, is draining batteries, says Mikko Haipanen, director of the Finnish antivirus research company F-Secure. Sorry. Just found it not amusing. Haipanen said Kabir was found Monday in a technology gadget store in Santa Monica, California, when a passing techie spotted a telltale sign on the screen of a phone in the store. the danger is small at the moment, because in part because of the range of handheld technologies. This is unlike the personal computer world dominated by the store owner's phone had been infected, Hypanen said. Both devices were Nokia. Analysts say the various features in smartphones make them more vulnerable to viruses than voice-only phones. Yeah, that's what I call smart, being more vulnerable to crap than the dumb ones. That's smart. I think we are living in a new era when that's what smart means. And, ladies and gentlemen, new measurements from the world's oceans announced Thursday. Did I miss this? That this was not on any of the Sunday talk shows? Like this would be something worth asking anybody about? New measurements from the world's oceans announced Thursday give the most compelling evidence yet that man-made global warming is underway and hint at a more dramatic and sudden climate change in the future. Look, I've got a fan on in the studio, and it's wintertime. Doesn't that prove anything? No, it doesn't. Two different sets of ocean readings presented at the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science solidify the scientific underpinnings of global warming.
That's junk science.
And point to an increased chance for a much-feared side effect in which global warming triggers a new ice age in the Northern Hemisphere. I know. This is where people get off the attention train right here.
Hey, man, how can global warming trigger an ice age? I mean, that's junk science.
The debate is no longer whether there is a global warming signal, Tim Barnett, a marine physicist at Scripps Oceanography Institute, who analyzed 9 million ocean temperature and salinity readings. He says the debate is, what are we going to do about it? Tim, you know what we're going to do about it. We're doing it. The new data show that the world's oceans have heated up just as predicted in global warming computer models, and more ominously, that massive amounts of fresh water from melting Arctic ice are seeping into the Atlantic Ocean. This is where the stuff gets really bad. What scientists have found could cause parts of the eastern United States to cool by several degrees. According to Ruth Curry, a scientist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. Curry found that between 1965 and 95, about 4,800 cubic miles of fresh water, more than Lake Superior, Erie, Ontario, and Huron combined, melted from the Arctic and poured into the normally salty northern Atlantic. The increased influx of fresh water eventually could shut down the Great Ocean Conveyor Belt. Helps regulate water and air temperatures. This is a system of currents that moves water in multiple directions from the Greenland coast all the way to Australia and back. It depends on heavier salt water sinking to pull warm water from the tropics to higher latitudes. Climate scientists fear that if polar ice continues to melt, the resulting lower salinity in the Atlantic would shut down the conveyor belt, something that happened once about 8,200 years ago. Early calculations show that it would take another 4,300 cubic miles of fresh water from the Arctic to trigger that shutdown. If the thaw continues at current rates, the shutdown scenario would occur in about two decades. And Greenland ice, which so far hasn't been melting with the rest of the Arctic, is now starting to thaw. We are taking the first steps toward this scenario, Curry said. The system is moving in that direction. The new ocean data from Scripps reveal how global warming has already changed the Earth. 7 million temperature readings and 2 million salinity readings created the best fingerprint of man-made global warming ever, Barnett said. From 1969 to 99, surface ocean temperatures rose about two-thirds of a degree. Temperatures hundreds of feet deeper hadn't warmed as much. These readings are nearly exactly what computer models say they should be. If global warming were the result of natural variability or increased sun activity, the temperature and salinity changes would be very different from the ones seen in the data. The evidence really is overwhelming, Barnett says.
Hey, it's junk science. Of course it's overwhelming. It's junk science.
Not scary, ladies and gentlemen, just the end of a crusade. Can't say crusade. The end of a mission I was on to find the world's most expensive banana. I think we found it was some airport or other, which is only appropriate. But Becky and Kurt write, Dear Harry, we live in South Africa and were recently on holiday in Uganda, only to discover what is probably the cheapest banana in the world, a bunch, An entire bunch of approximately 200 bananas costs around 3,000 Ugandan shillings in the rural areas. That's around 175 American, making a single banana under a penny. So, next time you want that really, really cheap shot of much-needed potassium, ladies and gentlemen, Uganda. That's the place to go. For the second time in as many months, the Bush administration's new missile defense system failed to complete a key test this week. That's why we're building it. Before we test it, the budget is in for deployment of this system, ladies and gentlemen, that for the second time in 2 months has failed a key test. But, you know, this isn't a third-grade school teacher. We don't demand accountability from. It's automatically shut down a few seconds before an interceptor missile was to launch toward a mock enemy warhead. Defense officials said initial data pointed to a malfunction in support equipment at the launch site in the Marshall Islands. Oh, well, all right. If it's just support equipment, I'm not going to worry, because the failure could fuel debate in Congress over the costs and benefits of the multi-billion-dollar system. Some lawmakers say the Pentagon is rushing to deploy it before it's proved effective. Defense Secretary Rumsfeld has so far refrained from putting the system on alert. This week's miscarried test was created to duplicate a December 15th trial that also failed. Well, it did duplicate it then. Exactly. That's amazing. Both tests were to have marked the first flights of the advanced interceptor missile. Earlier tests had used a slower, less sophisticated interceptor. This is the smart one. It's more vulnerable. The latest tests called for the interceptor's booster rocket to shoot into space and release a kill vehicle that closes in on a mock enemy warhead and destroys it in a high-speed collision. In both recent tests, the mock enemy warhead was launched successfully from Kodiak, Alaska, but the interceptor failed to get off the ground. Well, why don't we just... Ladies and gentlemen, if the mock enemy warhead works, just use that for the defense system. Screw the interceptor. Does that not make sense? The mock enemy warheads launch every time. Defense officials say each test appears to have failed for a different reason. Is that good news or bad? In the December 15th test, a software failure on the interceptor itself led to a communications breakdown between the flight computer and the component that steers the missile. This week, the countdown went well beyond that stage, suggesting that that problem, which officials had described as a very minor software glitch, had been solved. Instead, initial reports suggest this week's trouble lay with the command launch equipment on the ground, which can automatically halt a launch if a problem is detected. The problem had nothing to do with the interceptor. It could be the silo, says the spokesman for the Missile Defense Agency. Okay, so it was the silo. Where do you want to store them instead, then? My fridge? Babe? My fridge, babe? Was the question. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, it's before I babe anymore, I think it's time for a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
Because I could get into a babing frenzy. Dateline Chicago. The president of the American Medical Association is being criticized for defending a Roman Catholic-affiliated medical school's decision to ban a gay student group from campus. Dr. John Nelson was quoted in a suburban New York newspaper comparing the ban at New York Medical College of the gay student group with Brigham Young University's decision to suspend four former football players accused of rape. He also compared it to the Mormon school's refusal to allow caffeinated soft drinks on the campus. Dr. Nelson has now issued a statement saying his views were misrepresented, and he apologized. The AMA says it does not support the gay student ban. The British Broadcasting Corporation has been forced to issue an apology after a Church of Scotland minister broadcast an uncorroborated story about a Muslim conscripted into the Israeli army and imprisoned for refusing to shoot Palestinian schoolchildren. Reverend Dr. John Bell of the Iona community told listeners to Radio 4's Thought for the Day on February 10th that he met the 19-year-old former corporal 2 years ago. Israeli embassy in London said the story had caused irreparable damage. The BBC received dozens of complaints from members of the Jewish community who pointed out that the account could not be true. Israeli Arabs are exempt from conscription. Dr. Bell released a statement apologizing for his remarks, which he accepted might have been wrongly interpreted as, quote, furtive racism. He said the soldier had never said he'd been conscripted, and his presumption was wrong. He said the teenager was also 21, not 19, as he'd said in the broadcast, and therefore could have been a corporal. Dr. Bell will continue as a contributor to Thought for the Day. But the BBC apologized, saying it had been unable to find any evidence to support the story. The apology was issued by the BBC's Religion and Ethics Department. Where's CBS's Religion and Ethics Department? Where's NBC's? Where's NPR's? The BBC, ladies and gentlemen, has a Religion and Ethics Department, which said that the factual mistakes in Dr. Bell's script should have been checked before being broadcast. But that's what a Religion and Ethics Department would say. The National Hockey League has canceled the season Wednesday with an apology to its fans, becoming the first major professional sport. Well, major? Excuse me? Sports league to lose a full season as a result of a labor dispute. Everyone associated with the NHL owes our fans an apology for being unable to accomplish what is necessary for our game and our fans. We are truly sorry, said Commissioner Gary Bettman. Calgary Flames co-owner and chairman of the board of governors Harley Hotchkiss apologized to fans. We want you to know we're deeply sorry for any hardship caused. Minnesota Wild chairman Bob Nagel also apologized to fans. They don't apologize to fans when they raise ticket prices, do they? Sorry. No, I'm sorry. Among the offending movie titles, a Princeton University student magazine published this month under the facetious headline, Top 10 Holocaust Movies I've Never Seen But Would Like To, were A Cattle Car Named Desire and Exterminate the Fockers. The list has set off such a hornet's nest of criticism that the magazine's top two editors who composed the list are apologizing for it, saying a written apology has already been prepared for publication in the next edition of the Nassau Weekly. Juniors. Jacob Savage and Rob Bjerke, who say they are Jewish, refused to give a reason for the decision to publish the list, but Savage said it was ill-advised. Holocaust humor by amateurs, ladies and gentlemen, always a bad idea. Criminals posing as legitimate businesses have accessed critical personal data stored by Choice Point Incorporated, a firm that maintains databases of background information on you and me. The incident involves a wide swath of consumer data, including names, addresses, social security numbers, credit reports, and other information. Choice Point aggregates and sells such personal information to government agencies and private companies. Last week, the company notified between 30,000 and 35,000 consumers in California that their personal data may have been accessed by unauthorized third parties, according to Choice Point spokesman James Lee. Choice Point has apologized for any inconvenience this incident may cause, said another Choice Point spokesman, Chuck Jones. Not that one. Not the funny one. But Choice Point has no way of knowing whether anyone's personal information actually has been accessed or used to commit identity theft, he added. Really? You have all those databases, you aggregate them, you sell them, and you don't know when you've been hacked who's... Dateline Kansas City, the corporate leader in helping consumers express their sentiments, is sharing one of its own, It's Sorry, Hallmark Cards, whose website couldn't keep up with surging customer demand. On Valentine's Day, apologized this week because many online card recipients were unable to view their greetings, and some would-be senders were locked out of the site. We owe you an apology, the company said in an email to those affected by the glitch. Oh, Hallmark can find out who's affected by that, by their glitch, but Choice Point can't, you see? Choice Point, call Hallmark and ask for their software, would you? Quote, in short, we made promises, said Hallmark, to deliver that were not kept. And for those of you who experienced that disappointment, we are so sorry for any frustration we may have caused, unquote. Because, you see, Hallmark really cares about Valentine's Day, unlike the host of this broadcast. Polling and management consulting firm The Gallup Organization apologized this week to a Florida company it had sued for alleged trademark infringement and unfair competition. In a news release, Gallup officials said it was withdrawing the lawsuit because Proudfoot Consulting had purchased survey results from a European company that used the Gallup name, and Proudfoot was not aware of the restrictions on the use of that name in the United States. There's a settlement agreement. We're pleased that everything has worked out, said an attorney for Proudfoot, which had an agreement with a polling company in Australia. And U.S. District Judge Gerald Bruce Lee looked at the defendant before him, Michael Sears, saying, "You're a person who had everything, and in the blink of an eye, you jeopardized everything." Sears was given a fine of $250,000, 2 years of probation, and 200 hours of community service for aiding and abetting illegal employment negotiations with Darlene Droyan when she was a top Air Force procurement official. Sears was a former high-ranking Boeing executive. Droyan was later hired by Boeing before being fired, along with Sears, in 2003. She was sentenced to 9 months in prison and fined $5,000 for her role. Lawyer Theodore Polos for Sears said his client's wrongdoing was a spontaneous, instantaneous decision made by a man who has otherwise led an exemplary, law-abiding life. Sears says, "I know what I did was wrong. I'd like to apologize to the Air Force, to the Department of Defense, and to the citizens of this country for any upheaval I may have caused. I'd also like to apologize to my friends and to the wonderful people at the Boeing Company. I know I let them down." That's very heartfelt, the apologies of this week, don't you think, ladies and gentlemen? No wonder. I mean, that's worth copywriting when they're that sincere. Ladies and gentlemen, the governor of California, the governator, I know, it is tiresome. It's the tiresome-nator. Went to Washington calling himself the collectinator to get more federal money for California, because California, I think, gets 70-something cents back for every dollar it sends to Washington. So he met with the full California congressional delegation this week. He complained that previous efforts to rally that delegation had fizzled. He had visited Washington a year ago with a similar purpose. He now urged members to overcome partisan differences and work together. "Let's work together to help me." But Representative Diane Watson of Los Angeles shot back that he was fueling divisions. "Turn down your rhetoric toward policymakers," she said. Schwarzenegger has made repeated digs at state legislators, calling them losers, stooges, spending addicts, saying they've accomplished so little they must be taking sleeping pills. He gave no ground at Capitol this week, repeating his contention that the state capitol is in the thrall of special interests that he is determined to defeat. However, he did not repeat his description of California legislators as girly men.
1, 2, 3. Oh, sorry. 5, 6, 7, 8. I want to be a girly man. Have awesome tits and a great looking can. Ride with some dudes in their tricked out van. I want to be a girly man. Being a guy is such a great job. You can be a dandy, you can be a slob. Believe you me, I've got what it takes, but it just doesn't frost my cakes. I want to be a girly man, wear lots of makeup and say it's a tan. Dyeing my hair, that's part of the plan. I want to be a girly man. You know from movies I'm in love with my bod. It's my meal ticket, it's my muse, it's my god. Don't get me wrong, I love my wife, and I'm not going under the knife. I want to be a girly man. Squeeze some boobs and say I'm part of the clan. Go home and whip up a great tasting flan. I want to be a girly man.
I want to be a girly man.
Girly man. Sometimes I'm blatant, but I'm always latent. I want to be a girly man.
Thank you. like lonely tears through misty eyes. Rain streaming down my face brings memories. Heart cannot erase. Here alone in all my sorrow, waiting for the clouds to hurry by, praying that a new tomorrow will put the sun back in the sky. Wash away my tears, so when that sun appears, I'll see my love again. Clouds to hurry by, praying that a new tomorrow will put the sun back in the sky. Please rain, wash away my tears, so when that sun appears, I'll see my love again.
This is Le Show in rainy Southern California. And, ladies and gentlemen, some news about the Digital Wonderland. A House committee held a hearing this week on plans to circumvent that deadline for turning over, for shutting down analog TV and entering the Digital Wonderland, where all the pictures are so damn crystal clear. As I've explained on this broadcast so many times, the current federal law requires a so-called soft date for the switch. It was 2005. It's now 2006. Watch it recede. Unless 85% of the population has digital TVs, in which case it can happen sooner. And as noted here last week, outgoing FCC Commissioner Mike Powell, is going out right now, had suggested redefining that 85% to mean people who were getting digital TV down-converted by their cable systems into crappy old analog pictures. That's the Digital Wonderland right there. This week, the House was having hearings on it and discussing what would have to be done if a hard date, which some desire, so they can take the analog frequencies and sell them to wireless companies so they can be attacked by smart viruses, a hard date could be imposed. And the problem is, of course, a lot of people would be left with their analog TVs and blank screens, which could redound to the pain of people running for Congress. So congressmen are trying to alleviate the pain by saying, well, why doesn't the federal government just buy digital set-top boxes for all the people, the poor people with analog TVs who are too poor to buy set-top boxes of their own? Estimated cost, at the low end, $10 billion. Why, that could buy half an hour of war in Iraq. Why would And for a technology supposedly dying a slow death, analog television appears decidedly healthy in Australia. Sales of analog television sets continue to impress retailers. Manufacturers continue to make new models, despite the introduction over 4 years ago of its replacement, digital television. About 1.1 million analog sets are sold in Australia each year, in a country of 18 million, 19 million. And there are at least 10 million televisions in Australian homes. In last year, almost 390,000 digital television sets were sold in Australia. Although it's not clear what that means. Could just mean a TV that can play DVDs. Doesn't mean it can actually receive digital signals over the air. But that gets too technical. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's move to the less technical, shall we? Let's move to news from inside and outside the bubble of our bubblicious adventure. Speaking with one voice, this did make the news this week in this country. Speaking with one voice, top U.S. intelligence and military officials said terrorists are regrouping for possible strikes against the United States. Most interesting. It may be only a matter of time before Al-Qaeda or other groups attempt to use chemical, biological, radiological, or nuclear weapons, says a new CIA director, Porter Goss. Terrorists will recruit radical American converts. Goss also said the Iraq conflict has become a cause for extremists. Those jihadists who survive will leave Iraq experienced in and focused on acts of urban terrorism. They represent a potential pool of contacts to build transnational terrorist cells, groups, and networks, Goss said. So, we're creating, in Iraq, the newly trained urban terrorists of the future. Is that what he's saying? I think that's what he's saying. The insurgency continues to baffle the U.S. military and intelligence communities, and the U.S. occupation has become a potent recruiting tool for Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups, U.S. national security officials told Congress. News of our allies, ladies and gentlemen. The United Nations Nuclear Monitoring Agency chided Egypt in a confidential report this week for failing to declare nuclear sites and materials, but said its inspector had so far found no evidence that Egypt was making or seeking nuclear weapons. The IAEA said in the report that Egypt had not understood that it had to declare nuclear sites and materials, including a plant for separating plutonium. Oh, it's just they didn't understand, you see? Unlike certain I countries. Federal investigators have charged a Pakistan. This is news of our other great ally, Pakistan. Federal investigators have charged a Pakistani businessman who ran an import business in the U.S. with urging Al-Qaeda to acquire 50 nuclear weapons for use against American troops. Saifullah Paracha is being held in Gitmo. He told the Al-Qaeda operatives that he knew where to get nuclear weapons. This is a Pakistani. I bet he did. Amid the outrage about the oil for food program run by the United Nations and possible corruption in it, news came that the U.S. Treasury Department provided assurances that the U.S. would not obstruct two companies' plans to import millions of barrels of oil from Iraq in March 2003 in violation of U.N. sanctions, according to email from one of the companies. The Bush administration directly abetted Jordan's efforts to build up its strategic reserves with smuggled Iraqi oil in the weeks before the invasion. And my favorite piece of news from beyond the bubble this week, American soldiers traumatized by fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan are to be offered the drug ecstasy to help free them of flashbacks and recurring nightmares. The Food and Drug Administration has given the go-ahead for soldiers to be included in an experiment to see if MDMA can treat post-traumatic stress disorder. Scientists think the feelings of emotional closeness reported by those taking the drug could help the soldiers talk about their experiences to therapists or strangers they meet at a rave. Now, I just inserted that last note. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the story of Jeff Gannon. This is a guy who came to some attention for asking a series of what were softball and partisan questions at presidential press briefings involving Scott McClellan, the presidential press secretary, his predecessor, Ari Fleischer, and in one case, the president himself. some samples of Jeff Gannon's questions over the last few months.
Go ahead, Jeff.
In your denunciations of the Abu Ghraib photos, you've used words like sickening, disgusting, and reprehensible. Would you have any adjectives left to adequately describe the pictures from Saddam's rape rooms and torture chambers? And will Americans ever see those images?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up, Jeff. Go ahead, Jeff.
Doesn't Joe Wilson owe the president and America an apology for his deception and his own intelligence failure?
Jeff, go ahead.
Thank you. With all the reaching out that's going on around here, the president said Thursday in his press conference that he was reaching out to the press corps. What did he mean by that, and why would he feel the need to reach out to a group of supposedly nonpartisan people?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Since there have been so many questions about what the president was doing over 30 years ago, what is it that he did after his honorable discharge from the National Guard? Did he make speeches alongside Jane Fonda denouncing America's racist war in Vietnam? Did he testify before Congress that American troops committed war crimes in Vietnam? And did he throw somebody else's medals at the White House to protest a war America was still fighting?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Senate Democratic leaders have painted a very bleak picture of the U.S. economy. Harry Reid was talking about soup lines, and Hillary Clinton was talking about the economy being on the verge of collapse. Yet, in the same breath, they say that Social Security is rock solid and there's no crisis there. Well, how are you going to work with people who seem to have divorced themselves from reality?
That last question asked of President Bush was the one, because it misquoted both Senator Clinton and Senator Reid, that brought attention to Jeff Gannon. I'm putting his name in quotes because it's not his real name. His real name is James Guckert. We talked about this a little bit last week. It's now a much bigger story. James Guckert said he adopted the name Jeff Gannon in various interviews because it was easier to spell, because it was easier to pronounce, or because Jeff Gannon, he said at one point, was more commercially appealing. His background was he had an auto repair business before being hired by Republican activist Bobby Eberle, who runs GOP USA, as a volunteer. Hired as a volunteer, ladies and gentlemen. Eberle says he never asked Gannon for any information on journalistic background before hiring him as a reporter. And under his real name, James Guckert, to get Secret Service clearance, he then showed up at the White House every day, almost every day, at these briefings, with daily press passes, even though he had no journalistic credentials. The White House says, well, we don't pass on credentials of journalists. And one newspaper in Texas reports that when it tried to get a daily pass to the White House, it took almost 2 weeks for one. Yet Jeff got one every day. He told the New York Times this week he had no journalistic experience before arriving at GOP USA. Asked why he did not, in his functions as a White House reporter, even try to interview White House officials, he said, quote, I thought there was a lot of meat that came out of the press briefings. You may say that lacks some kind of journalistic ambition, he added, unquote. He did have other kinds of ambition. One of the things that's made this story tick is the finding on websites that Jeff Gannon had offered himself for employment as a male escort on websites including hotmilitarystuds.com and workingboys.com. There are photographs of Jeff. His name is Jeff on those sites, I guess because it's easier to pronounce than James. And was doing that, apparently, right up about to the time that he started showing up at White House press briefings. San Antonio radio producer Susan Ferris said she could always count on him for radio interviews. I said, how do you have such great sources? And he just laughed it off, she told editor and publisher. Now we all know. He very often called me and offered to be on the show to talk about his stories. I used to book him all the time. We used him on tons of White House stuff. She said she had no idea that Gannon was not Guckert's real name. And Ari Fleischer this week, the former White House press secretary, said he started to have doubts about Gannon and stopped calling on him for a while. But then he left, and Scott McClellan took over and started calling on him again. It's an interesting story, needless to say, ladies and gentlemen. The thing I wonder about is you know, how just that whole lifestyle fits together. Fortunately, his name is commercially appealing enough. I think we may soon find out.
Gannon.
Hey, Jeff here. Blogging my thoughts about my days and my nights. Yesterday was mondo busy as well as bizay. I'd barely logged on, and I do mean barely, to see if I'd had any takers at hotmilitarystud.com when a lot more than my brain came to attention. 2 hours later, I was counting my blessings and my hundreds in a really nice Georgetown house under the watchful gaze of a congressman I knew only as the bottom.
Oh, God, this is weird.
Hey, dude, this is the only thong I own.
No, I mean, you look even odder in person than you do on your website.
Well, you know what they say. The internet adds 20 pounds. So, what's your pleasure?
Oh, I was sort of thinking you'd tell me, being the top and all.
Gotcha. Okay, let's start off real drill instructor style here. MAGA, drop to the floor and give me 20 of your best.
Question?
Well, look, this scenario doesn't really...
No, I know. I just... 20 what?
Oh, sorry. Push-ups. And sorry about saying sorry, Tubbs. Tubbs, don't do that. Okay, maggot, drop. You call those push-ups? You should be wearing a push-up bra.
You're right.
Not only that... Oh, man, sorry, I have to take this. Just keep it up and try not to look so freaking Nelly. Gannon here.
Jeff, it's Mr. R.
Hey, yeah, man, what up?
We've got a press briefing in an hour. Helen Thomas is loaded for bear. We gotta have you here to, you know, balance things out.
Oh, but I'm right in the middle of...
17... 18...
Jeff, what could possibly be more important than covering a presidential press briefing for Talon News?
Well, you know, when you put it that way...
19...
After all... We agreed this would be your top priority.
Yeah, you're right. Top priority.
Uh-huh.
20!
Hold on. Okay, maggot. Now it gets interesting. Close your eyes. Before our friend on the floor knew what was coming down, I'd blindfolded him, jammed my spare cell phone earpiece into his ear, and made it down to street level in time to hail a cab for the Casablanca. Unfortunately, my taxi seemed to be a demonstration project for the administration's guest worker program.
I am telling you, I cannot enter the White House complex without some kind of hard pass. Hard pass, you understand?
Yeah, Omar, I do understand. After all, I'm the one who was born here. Just make a left at the barricade.
Look, here's what I understand. In case you haven't noticed, my skin is darker than Sag Ghost. I turn a direction the Secret Service doesn't like. I've got a head start on being reincarnated.
Nothing's gonna happen to you, dude. Just tell him it's Jeff Gannon from Talon News.
Talon News?
Mm-hmm.
What is that, some kind of magazine for bird finches?
Do me a favor, Sanjay. Just zip it and drive it. I've got softball to play. I figured my new best friend, the congressman back in Georgetown, was still too scared and happy to be wondering why he hadn't heard from me in half an hour. And when I did come up in his earpiece, he'd see why it was worth the extra 200. Meanwhile, back in the cab, shaking like a leaf, Gupta let me off at the White House private entrance. Here you go, pal.
$100? Thank you.
Yeah. Don't spend it all on ghee. 10 minutes later, I was sitting so close to Bill Plant, I could smell his chewing gum. We'd just gotten the 2-minute warning for the briefing. Excuse me, Mr. Plant.
Mm-hmm.
I know this sounds stupid, but I forgot my notebook.
Jeff, again?
Yeah, I know. The people at Talon News are going to have my ass in a sling, if not the rest of me. You couldn't just...
I think CBS News can spare a notebook. Just barely. There you go.
Thanks.
So, They rough on you over at Talon News?
Oh, slave drivers. Just like your own fearless leaders.
Yeah, right. Mm. Hey, how about those Yanks?
Bill, I'm surprised at you. I was clear to those charges. Even for a hard-bitten newsman like me, there's still a thrill when halfway through a difficult news conference, the great Mr. Scott McClellan turns to me for a question. Yesterday, with Bill Plant looking at me kind of sideways, I knew I was going to have to deliver big time.
Yes, Jeff.
Scott, with the Democrats having no real plan except to obstruct the president's agenda, who's really the enemy of bipartisan cooperation in this town? And...
Jeff. Hello, Jeff.
Yeah, one second.
And what does the president feel like doing about it?
Good question.
And you, maggot. Give me 100 more push-ups, now.
Oh, more push-ups?
You okay, Jeff? He's answering your question.
Ha! Fine, Bill. Thanks. Never better. Back in Georgetown, my congressman friend had passed out trying to give me 100 of his best. So when my cab dropped me back off at his building, I just ran upstairs to work up a sweat, then lay on top of his body. When he came to, I collected my $2,000 and called it a night. I guess you could say yesterday I was really on top of the news. I guess that's why I call me Gannon.
Come, that rainy day.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's one more apology to mention. A local city, Fargo city commissioner, who was active against President Bush, tried to go to a local meeting on the Social Security thing, and was fingered to be on a list. She said she was welcomed by an unidentified official who apologized and blamed an overzealous staffer for compiling the list. But a White House spokesman said the list was the work of an overzealous volunteer. Hey, what's the diff when you're overzealous? Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this rain-soaked edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Around the world via the internet on your computer at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com on channel 108 on Sirius Satellite Radio, and available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. And it would be just like using the mock enemy payload as our defense, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. The show playlists available at harryshearer.com. This show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of mobile phone virus outbreaks and a home to the homeless. Or, attention New York Times, the home of the homeless.